You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Welcome to episode number 3 of our Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA. Chris McPherson here, along with Fran Duffy, and we're glad to welcome back Bo Wolf. You were so missed last week. How's it going, Bo?
It's going all right. I missed you guys. Thanks for taking care of everything.
We tried. But, you know, since you were gone, we were trying to think, what did Bo do during his week off? So Fran and I, we talked to some other people, and we came up with a few ideas.
Okay.
What did Bo Wolf do during his week away?
Number one, and really this, we talked about it last week.
Yes.
Illegally fixing the times at Wake Forest Pro Day. Mike Campanaro had a big day. Nikita Whitlock put up 40 plus reps on the bench. Here's Bo meeting Michael Campanaro.
That's very good. I can neither confirm nor deny that.
Okay. Well, that's what we thought.
So also wondered, you know, Wake Forest, they fired their basketball coach and they had a rally
very,
in the quad.
Very big.
So yes. Thought you might have been leading the charge on that.
Oh,
too,
I bought the entire campus many, many rolls of toilet paper for that to roll the quad.
All right. So true, you're at Wake Forest. Number two. Trying out to be the fifth man in the Mets starting rotation, true or false?
That is definitely true.
Okay, well, we have you with Mets legend Mike Piazza.
Very nice.
It's a great photo. I mean, the guy who took it clearly has an eye for the camera.
For talent.
Yeah, but there's a reason that he's behind the camera and not in front of it.
That's a good, wow. Valid point.
Shots fired.
Number three. Going shopping for thermals with Tony Pauline. True or false?
That's definitely not true, but Tony does send me photos every time he goes shopping for thermals, and we are working hard with the Eagles merchandise department to create an Eagles thermal specifically for Tony.
It's hard to get that midnight green. That's really challenging to get that midnight
green. It's true,
green.
But if you have that chest hair that Tony has, you would want to show it off as well.
Tony, obviously our good friend from DraftInsiders.net. And the last one, obviously, Bo and I are joining C-Mac in the married life this summer. Bo going on his honeymoon on safari. So we were thinking maybe you took the week off and you went on safari, except you didn't take your fiance Rachel. You went with Cosmo. Cosmo the barber. Please tell us about Cosmo and your relationship with
that's,
him over there.
That's a very nice fellowship. Pretty good. Listen. When you are losing your hair, as I am, and you take great pride in your hair, you have to trust someone. I only have so many haircuts left. So I make sure that I only go back to my friend Cosmo, straight off the boat from Reggio Calabria. He's the only man I trust with these locks. And I spare no expense with Cosmo. He's the only one I trust to take care of these.
Have you ever gotten a haircut in Philadelphia?
Yes, once, and it was not up to par. Any time I get a haircut not with Cosmo, it only confirms that I need to go back to Cosmo.
Have you ever driven back just solely for the purpose of getting a haircut?
100%, yes.
He crosses multiple state boundaries in order to get his haircut. I really like the jeans that you're rocking.
Yeah, I don't know why it looks like I have a midget arm. That's the one thing I'm not so sure I love.
But lack of length. Good. This is the draft. The Journey to the Draft podcast. Exactly. Lack of length is apparent in that photo. And for those of you wondering, if you're listening to the podcast, go to PhiladelphiaEagles.com. It's in the first couple minutes of the podcast. Check out the video version. You could see these photos that are
very lifelike. Shorter arms than what's his name from Syracuse last year. The Giants guy.
Justin Pugh.
I got Justin Pugh arms in that photo.
Pride of Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
Yes. That's right. Former Eagles fan. Probably right. Still an Eagles fan underneath it all.
Of course. No doubt. Our secret spy.
That's right.
He's
for us what Steve Smith was for the Giants a couple of years ago.
Very nice. Very nice. All comes full circle. So everyone, welcome
nice work,
to
guys.
Our
good.
Journey to Draft podcast. We missed you last week, Bo. And so, of course, we are going to get into the latest draft nuggets. Our guest this week, joining us by phone from Houston, is Lance Zierlein from thesidelineview.com. Going to give some insight into the quarterbacks, what the Texans might do at number one. And he's also very, very good at analyzing offensive line play. He's going to talk about the Eagles and Lane Johnson and what the Eagles could do possibly with the offensive line in the draft. We're going to have our piece from our Scouts Notebook feature discussing the offensive line. Certain scouting terms that you hear, we'll bring up one of them and what it actually means. And then we'll also have your input on The Pick Is In. The question this week we solicited on our Twitter account, at Eagles Insider, was which offensive player, regardless of where the Eagles pick, which offensive player would you dream of being in Midnight Green next season? But first, we're going to get into our draft buzz, the latest headlines. And the first one is Eagles-related. Many reports, and at this time, nothing made official as we record this, but that the Eagles are reportedly interested in bringing Mark Sanchez, formerly of the New York Jets, released on Monday, to compete for the backup quarterback spot behind Nick Foles. Gentlemen, your thoughts on this, and maybe does it eliminate the Eagles from drafting a quarterback in May?
I certainly don't think it eliminates the possibility, but we've talked about this in the past. Free agency is for plugging those holes so that you are allowed to take the best available player come draft day. And right now, the Eagles do sort of need a third quarterback. I think we all like G.J. Kinney, star of one of the better Wolfsden interviews this year, but he's not ready, I think, to be necessarily counted on as a number three quarterback. So you bring in a guy like Mark Sanchez, who is an experienced starter, potentially, reportedly, they'll do this. Say what you will about Mark Sanchez, and he has thrown more interceptions and touchdowns in his career. He's struggled, especially over the past few years, but he does have four playoff wins. And if you look at a guy who had worse surrounding talent on offense, I can't think of one. His offensive line has been terrible the last couple of years. He hasn't had good receivers. The running game has been pretty bad as well. I think that he's a guy who maybe has potential as a number two quarterback. So if they do bring him in to compete with Matt Barkley, and by no means is he going to beat Matt Barkley necessarily, I think it'll be a good competition. But I think it does allow the Eagles to not reach for a quarterback in the mid rounds if they want one, but it allows them to, if there's a guy at the top of their board, to certainly take that guy.
It's 100% true. And you look around the league, you could do a lot worse than Mark Sanchez as a backup quarterback. So just piggybacking off what Bo said, I mean, you take a quarterback here in free agency, you add a couple safeties, you add a couple linebackers, you're supplementing the depth on your roster up and down, so that when you go into the draft, there's no dire need that you need to fill. And like Bo said, it allows you to say, okay, we're just going to go by the board, select the best guys available, and go from there.
And C-Mac, as you said this morning, LeSean McCoy foretold this in the summer last year.
Yeah, by calling Matt Barkley Mark. So maybe he was onto something there. So and the interesting connection there with the two USC quarterbacks. All right, number two on our draft buzz, the compensatory picks were announced at the league owners' meetings down in Orlando. Dave Spadaro providing fabulous coverage, and the Eagles were not awarded any picks, so they still have six moving forward into May's draft. No surprise there regarding the compensatory picks, but you would think that the Eagles, with as deep as this draft is, want to get a little more ammo, a little more firepower.
Yeah, I think that's something they'd like to do. We'll see if they're able to do it.
General Manager Howie Roseman did speak with reporters at the owners' meetings, and he reiterated his stance that he had back at the Combine in February that the wide receiver depth in this draft class is extremely unique and by far the deepest position amongst any in this year's draft. Now, everyone keeps thinking about Chip Kelly and his mantra of big people beat up little people. And there are a lot of tall receivers. We've talked about them on the shows the last couple of weeks, guys like Mike Evans, Calvin Benjamin. But one report from NJ.com has that the Eagles could be looking at a guy like Brandon Cooks, Oregon State, 5'10", 189 pounds, would not exactly fit that big people beat up little people mantra, but would be another dynamic weapon to add to the Eagles' offense. However, I think he's a guy that if the Eagles were going to take him, would have to take him at number 22.
Yeah, I know Jimmy Kemsky of Philly.com has been a big Brandon Cooks to the Eagles fan as well. I like Brandon Cooks, but Fran, I know you like him a lot as well.
I do. And you know, obviously the big difference between him and the other guys in this class is size. So that's why he may not be looked at as a, you know, quote-unquote number one wide receiver. But you look at him, and he's a guy that, you know, can be moved all around the formation, is a really nuanced route runner, and shows the ability to be able to stack defenders, get over top, and sell double moves, and really shows the ability to separate. He's a great yard-after-catch guy, great in the screen game. So, yeah, he'd be a great fit, not just here, but for a number of different teams.
And, of course, Chip Kelly, very familiar with Brandon Cooks after playing against him in the Civil War for a few years.
So. Absolutely.
Yes, very much so. So I think the consensus is he's a first-round guy.
Well, I think we don't know how the wide receivers are going to shake out, because maybe those teams in the back end are going to say, I don't want to take one here because I know there's going to be a guy in the second round that I can take. So it's going to be interesting to see how these wide receivers shake out.
Absolutely. And it's the, you know, you look around and we've talked about it in weeks past. I mean, you look at Davante Adams and Dante Moncrief, both the LSU kids, Martavis Bryant, you know, Sammy Watkins, Mike Evans, Kelvin Benjamin, obviously. There's a slew of receivers.
Campanero.
Campanero, obviously. But, you know, there's a slew of receivers at the top of this draft that could go in any number of orders. I guarantee you that if you polled, you know, whether it's NFL executives or NFL draft analysts about not only who the top five receivers are, but then who 6 through 10 are, you're going to get a litany of different answers. So, you know, just a really intriguing group overall.
So who is number one in this crop? Dane Brugler, NFL draft analyst, reports that at least two teams have Mike Evans from Texas A&M, caught all those passes from Johnny Manziel the last couple of seasons, as the number one receiver in this class, when everyone, all the experts and analysts, have said that Sammy Watkins is the clear guy at number one. Fran, what do you make of the fact that maybe some teams are favoring someone like Evans over Sammy Watkins?
Well, it comes down to size. I think that's the number one thing. So, you know, Greg Cosell talks about size being an attribute for quarterbacks, and I think now with the development of the back shoulder throw in football now, and, you know, teams wanting somebody who can go down in the red zone and separate with length, I mean, the back shoulder throw is just, you know, Mike Mayock said it best in our Scouts Notebook series, is the back shoulder throw has changed football. So I think, you know, that will vault, you know, someone like Evans over Watkins just because he's got that in his back pocket. He's got the size advantage. So I think that's where it comes from. Obviously, Watkins is a phenomenal talent. But, you know, the reason why he's not compared to Calvin Johnson and A.J. Green and the rare prospects, quote unquote, that have come out the last few years is because he's not 6'4". He's, you know, 6'1".
So is it fair to say that the comparison between those guys is Sammy Watkins is the better athlete, but Mike Evans is better at the catch point? And if you don't think that Sammy Watkins is going to be able to necessarily run free from NFL speed in the secondary, then maybe you do think that Watkins is the best, if he's the best in terms of contested catch situations.
Yeah, I mean, Sammy Watkins is great at the catch point as well. So, you know, it's not that
we're splitting hairs.
Yeah, we're kind of splitting hairs there. It really is the fact that, you know, Sammy Watkins came in at just under 6'1", and Mike Evans came in at over 6'4". So, you know, that's the really where you're going to see that big difference. And I think Josh Norris, you know, put it perfectly on Twitter, is that, you know, you're seeing the NFL's, you know, reliance on size kind of rearing its head here. And so that's, you know, and again, that's two teams' opinion, and we don't know. There may be teams that see it differently, and maybe it's one of the other guys that's the top guy. So, really, it comes down to what you're looking for. If you're Detroit and you say, okay, I want what Chicago has, I want Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey, then you may say, okay, you know what, I want Mike Evans over Sammy Watkins. That just might be what their preference is.
Now, a lot of these top receivers we discussed are underclassmen. Dane Brugler also tweeted out that he believes that Pittsburgh's Devin Street is a top five senior wide receiver. Fran, what do you make of it? I think you're a big Devin Street fan, if I'm correct.
Devin Street, coming into the year, was probably my favorite of the senior receivers. I was very surprised to see that he wasn't at any of the All-Star games. I would imagine that he was waiting for the Senior Bowl invite that never came, and that's why he wasn't at the Shrine game. But no, I mean, he's a big, long kid who can get down the field. One guy he reminds me of is former Temple Owl Rod Streeter. But really, I mean, he's got that ability.
Plug for your Temple Owls.
Absolutely. So,
never heard of him.
Yes. He's no Michael Campanaro.
That's right.
You know, obviously, he shows the ability to get down the field. He's a good yard after catch guy. He's a willing blocker on the perimeter. Really a guy in this senior class that I think stands out, and I was happy to see Dane put that out there.
But and you've talked about this before. There might only be 6 or 7 senior receivers drafted because there are so many good underclassmen. This receiver class is just so stacked.
Absolutely. Over the last 5 years, an average of 30 receivers have gotten drafted every year. So you figure there's 30 guys on average taken every year. 18 juniors came out this year. So that's over half that class. That narrows it down to about 12. If you take the Senior Bowl guys, that's, you know, about 12 guys. So if you're not a Senior Bowl guy, chances are you're not going to get drafted if you're just going strictly by the numbers. Obviously, there's going to be a couple Senior Bowl guys that aren't drafted. There's going to be a couple juniors that aren't drafted. So the numbers are off a little bit. But on average, you know, there's only so many spots that are, you know, that are going around. And we'll see how much higher that number is this year.
Well, and with the record number of just in general of underclassmen for a team like the Eagles, if they only end up with those 6 picks, undrafted free agency becomes all the more important because it's an extra round worth of underclassmen, so you would think that there's an extra seventh round worth of talent there. So the Eagles, if they only get those six picks, are going to be very aggressive in trying to scoop up a lot of those guys. It's going to be important for them.
Absolutely. We saw it last year, you know, with all the guys that they were able to bring in undrafted a year ago. And, you know, Russell Shepard was highly sought after.
Damon Square
was highly sought after. So, you know, I would imagine it'll be the same this year, if not more so.
Let's transition to defense for a second here. Timmy Jernigan of Florida State. At one point, Todd McShay, at one point very recently, as far back as February, was number five on Todd McShay's big board. McShay has released his latest version, and Jernigan has fallen all the way to number 30. What do we make of a guy that this, I want to say late in the process, but this guy that was going all the way as high as number five to fallen so far so fast? What could be beneath the surface here?
I think, you know, I can't speak for Todd McShay, so I'm not sure exactly what the basis is for, you know, putting him that high initially or bringing him that low now. But, you know, obviously there are issues with Jernigan that, you know, make him not a top five pick. I would say he's behind Aaron Donald. I think Donald, we talked about him in previous weeks, is a guy you can check all the boxes with him as far as senior tape, excellent. Junior tape was excellent. Senior Bowl, dominated. Combine, tore it up. So, you know, every step of the process, he's been excellent. You know, Jernigan is a great player. He's a junior coming out, so he didn't get to participate in any of the All-Star games, but you know, an athletic kid who people saw make some flash plays at Florida State in their national championship run. But, you know, there are some issues there. You know, people, some people question the first step, how he deals with double teams, what his ideal fit is, the motor. So, you know, there are some things that people question with him. Still a great player, but again, you know, maybe shouldn't have been as deserving of that number five rating.
Yeah, and I don't begrudge Todd McShay for adjusting his rankings. I mean, you get more information, you watch more tape, you talk to more teams, your rankings are going to change. So that's just sort of the process, I think.
Absolutely, no doubt.
Certainly, especially that more and more NFL teams and the coaches and the scouts get more involved in the process, that they learn more information, especially with an underclassman, because that's not a guy that the scouts are really focused on as much in the fall process, because they're trying to get all the tape and information they can on the seniors.
That's what I think that's going to be interesting moving forward. When you saw the amount of underclassmen that came out this year, you know, about 100 guys came out. I think teams now are going to start paying more attention to those underclassmen, you know, in the summer and early fall, anticipating that more often than not those guys are going to come out, whereas in the past it would be, you know, 50-50 that maybe they'd stay. I think now you're seeing those guys are coming out early and the teams might pay more attention to that.
Very, very fascinating from a philosophical debate is how much more time do you invest them, because I mean there's only 80 underclassmen who have come out when there's how many Division One programs, let alone, so it's still a finite number of players. So I mean, how many more resources do you want to provide and to try and dig up info on guys who, again, at the end of the day, may not come out in the process?
Well, then you have the information, but it's because then you have the information for the next year.
Certainly, so. Certainly,
right.
Yes.
It's interesting.
It is the information game, to say the least. From an Eagles standpoint on defense, Steve Munch from Scouts Inc. has three players the Eagles could target on day three. That's rounds 4-7 of the NFL draft. He has safety Deion Buchanan, linebacker Trent Murphy, and a former Chip Kelly player, Oregon defensive lineman Taylor Hart. Bo, your take on these three guys.
I think they make sense, two more than the other. I think Buchanan makes a lot of sense. I think there was a report that the Eagles had representation at the Washington State Pro Day. Obviously, the Eagles are always looking for those safeties, and Buchanan's a guy who we saw at the Senior Bowl. Very solid tackler, good hitter. I think the questions on him are more range-related, but he seems to be a good guy, and obviously everyone's going to always link Pac-12 players to Chip. And Taylor Hart, I think, makes sense there, too. Obviously, he's experienced playing in this front, playing for Steve as an arrow. I'm just thinking Steve Adazio. I was looking at you, Fran. That's the problem. I won't get you started.
Ignore that comment.
Yeah, exactly. Take over the game is the Jerry as an arrow thing. So I think Taylor Hart makes sense. Trent Murphy is a little bit more of a stretch to me because I don't know if he's got that open field fluidity that the Eagles would be looking for at that outside linebacker position. But Fran, what are your thoughts?
I think that's fair. I mean, the issue with Buchanan that I see is that we've talked about it with the Malcolm Jenkins signing, is that the Eagles are apparently looking for versatility in their safeties. Buchanan's a great player. If you want a guy who's going to be a tone setter on the back end, a guy who's a heavy hitter, a good tackler, reliable tackler, very experienced player. He started 43 games at Washington State, so a 4-plus-year starter. you just question whether or not he can hang in man coverage. So he's got great range. He's got the ability to play sideline to sideline. He's a good straight line guy, but you question whether he can play in man. But again, great talent. And if you get him and you put him in situation where he's able to take best advantage of those abilities, you've got a really, really good player. So, you know, Buchanan, again, Bo, we saw him at the Senior Bowl, and he, you know, handled himself pretty well. Hart is a guy who I've said numerous times I really, really like. It's a shame that he's kind of battling this foot injury right now, and he hasn't really been able to do anything. Couldn't play in the Senior Bowl, couldn't work out at the Combine. So I think that's kind of allowed him to slide under the radar a bit. And
could be a benefit for the Eagles.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. Or, you know, whoever ends up with him. I mean, they're going to get him later than they probably should have, which is great. And I think that's going to be the case with a lot of players in this draft, is, you know, just because of the depth, there's going to be guys who fall through the cracks at every position. And then Trent Murphy, I agree with Bo's stance on him. I mean, a guy who produced at a high level at Stanford and obviously had a ton of sacks this year, but you question whether or not he can play in space and, you know, just how dynamic of a pass rusher he is. So now there's some questions with him, but yeah, I mean, that's not a bad job by Steve Munch.
Buchanan is, you look at the safeties, it's Clinton Dixon Pryor at the top. Everybody sort of thinks Jimmy Ward is that number three guy. And then, well, some people.
Josh Norris. Number two, though.
Well, that's right. Everybody sort of thinks those are the top three guys.
Right, for sure.
After that, it's very muddled for that 4-5-6 range, and Buchanan's sort of right in that mix, right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, there's a bunch of guys that are up in that area, like you talked about, you know, whether it's a Craig Lawston or a personal favorite of mine, Antone Exum for Virginia Tech, Jonathan Dowling from Western Kentucky. You know, Brock Vereen is getting a lot of heat now from Minnesota, yeah. Shane Vereen's younger brother. So there, you know, there's definitely some guys in that range. And again, with just like we talked about earlier with the receivers, it's going to come down to what, you know, what teams are looking for, what your flavor is. So, you know, Buchanan is a guy that, you know, will intrigue a number of teams because of his skill set.
Fran, you're the lead producer in the ongoing Scouts Notebook series that's running on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. We're going to preview, before we bring on Lance Zierlein from the sidelineview.com, a little taste of scouting offensive line play. What were some of the things you were looking to get as you were talking to the experts and trying to explain what the evaluators look for when looking at the big uglies up front on offense?
Well, I think offensive line is a position that, in general, fans don't know much about, because unless you've, you know, played the position or put a lot of work into studying it, there's a lot of nuances that, you know, it's not just, oh, he's really big, or he's got really long arms, or he's got good feet. You know, think there are a lot of nuances to that position. And obviously at left tackle and guard and center and right tackle, you know, there's a number of different skill sets that you need to play all those different positions. So really just kind of wanted to break that down and allow fans to take a closer look at what went into each of those spots. So you know, I think we did that, and I think those guys did a really good job of kind of getting their points across. And there's not a lot of traits that are talked about that even still, you know, maybe talked about a little bit in the media, fans may not know exactly what they mean. So the one thing I think we're going to use in the show here is the ability to bend. What does that mean in terms of offensive line play? And we talk about it not just with offensive linemen, but with a number of different positions, you know, on the defensive line, at corner, at receiver, at quarterback, even the ability to, you know, bend on that front leg when you're dropping back to throw. So just the ability to bend and how that benefits an offensive lineman and why that's so important.
I think it's so difficult to evaluate offensive line because there are no stats.
Yeah,
I mean, the only thing other than height, weight, your measurables, we now have Pro Football Focus, which kind of does an apples-to-apples grade.
Yeah, don't get me started.
You know, I'm just saying, but that's what we have to work with right now. So there's no pancake blocks or things of that nature. So that's why I think another one of the reasons it's so tough to evaluate line play. And Ross Tucker from Sporting News and Sirius XM Radio did a great column on how subjective the process is, even inside, you know, coaches' offices when they break down the game tape. You know, there's such a finite amount of plays that could determine whether a guy is an all-pro and gets a big contract or is out on the street, you know, trying to get his next job. So it's something I think across the board that's very, very difficult to get at. So Fran talked about the ability to bend, and he asked all of the draft experts and analysts in our Scouts Notebook series, what does that term mean? Here is their explanation.
When scouting offensive linemen, really regardless of its tackle, guard, center, there are a few things that you look for when evaluating that position. First of all, you've got to be able to focus in on the natural athleticism and the bend.
In the NFL, you can win a lot of battles initially, but there's going to be a counter move, there's going to be some kind of stunt or line game, and the ability to bend your knees and adjust is really maybe the most important physical characteristic for an offensive lineman.
You can't be a waistbender. And we see that a lot at the college level. Guys who have a nice first punch, but against counter moves to either side, they can't sustain and mirror laterally from the waist down. And so they start bending at the waist, when really you need to bend at the knees, even bend at the ankles, get in a better leverage position, and stay in front of your pass rusher.
And also, if you have bend, there's a good likelihood that you're able to, even if jacked up initially by a powerful bull rush, you're able to re-sync your hips and regain your kind of natural base, and then explode from there with the hips and the lower body strength that you work so hard at as an offensive lineman. I'd say it's the first thing that you look for. If you don't have that trait, you're not going to succeed in the NFL.
Our special guest on this week's edition of Journey to the Draft, presented by AAA, is Lance Zierlein from Sports Talk Radio 790 in Houston, and also does an outstanding job as one of the preeminent analysts on thesidelineview.com. Lance, thank you very much for joining us. The first thing I want to get into, and I want your take as someone who is in Houston. John McClain from the Houston Chronicle is a respected beat writer, and he's been pounding the desk saying that the Texans are going to definitely take a quarterback at number one overall. Now, all of a sudden, he's backtracked and saying that it's going to be Jadeveon Clowney. What is your sense?
Oh, gee, what a shock.
Lance, what is your sense of what's going on there?
People around the national media, rightfully so, bought into what John McClain was saying because he's the beat writer. And, you know, if he's speaking this, he's so sure that this is the first pick is going to be a quarterback, and it must be a quarterback. And I'll tell you a little story. My last mock, and actually my only mock I put out this far, I've decided to intentionally scale it back to five, so I've only had one mock. I had Jadeveon Clowney going first, and I went through about 14 picks. And I'll be damned if I didn't get terrified by John McClain. He was so sure, and I said, you know what, I'm going to put Bortles there. Well, of course, that changed my entire draft board. And So my mock draft ended up taking almost 6 hours, I guess, to complete, because I do a lot of homework with these. I don't go halfway into them, and I'll call around the league and try to find out if I'm on a player or if I'm on a team and what they might do. And I knew better than that. And the reason is because John McClain is not tight with Bill O'Brien. Nobody's tight with Bill O'Brien. Nobody in the Houston media side with Bill O'Brien, and there's no way that John McClain knew for a fact that the Texans were taking a quarterback first, because Bill O'Brien, A, wouldn't have said that, and I also found out from somebody close to O'Brien, he was still in the midst of doing his homework on all of these players. There was no way. And if you work off of, you know, the way most teams think, nowadays more and more teams are going to, okay, I've got to be sure about you being we've got to have a franchise quarterback grade on you for us to take you, or we're not going to do it. Because you can get yourself in a big hole. And I think that's interesting what Dave Caldwell already said that at the combine about, you know, that's one of the ways that Jacksonville got in a hole is they took a guy, Blaine Gabbert, and then he tried to prove that he was the right guy. He tried to prove it, I guess, to themselves. And you see the kind of hole they got in. Well, with the Texans, I'm not sure that any of these guys are going to come up as absolute franchise quarterbacks with their grading scale. And if that's not the case, there's a pretty good chance that they'll just wait it out and draft a guy with superior traits, and that would be Jadeveon Clowney. So John McClain going out there like that, I kind of had a feeling that he was just speaking out of a need situation, because there was no chance that Rick Smith knew exactly what they were doing, and there was no chance Bill O'Brien told him that. Now that you see him backtrack, I think that means that he's doing just what everyone else is doing. He's hearing Bill O'Brien's comments. Bill O'Brien said yesterday, oh, yeah, we'll take a quarterback. We're going to take a quarterback. We just don't know which round.
Lance, it's been a while since we've seen any trade action with the number one overall pick. Is there any talk in Houston that might be a possibility?
Yeah, I think the Texans will try to shop it. Their team, that despite what you'll hear nationally, how they're just, you know, maybe one quarterback away from winning again right away. This is a team that's been gutted. Well, half the team's on the Eagles now, but this is a team that's been gutted from a depth standpoint. And they're not as deep a team as they need to be, and they're not as talented a team as they need to be to win right away. They need to really upgrade the entire roster. And I think the desire to trade back and add additional picks is going to be strong with the Texans. Now, here's a problem. Are they going to be that team that finally decides, let's forget what market value has been for the first pick in the past. Let's get away from that, and let's just take what we can get in terms of additional picks, and let's move back. And you'll have to have a team who wants to come up in order to do that. And I think there is a chance that you could find that, maybe somebody who wants to lift Greg Robinson, maybe somebody who's dying to get Jadeveon Clowney. But other than that, I don't think you're going to see anyone come up for any of the quarterback prospects, because everyone knows that there's a chance that at least one and maybe two of those guys could slide. So I think the Texans will try to trade. I just think it's going to be tough. I mean, this is one of the deepest drafts we've ever seen. So why would you want to give away additional picks from an incredibly deep draft? It just doesn't make sense.
Lance, so obviously we get the sense that, you know, they may be leaning towards Clowney. Is that the direction you would go if that was your seat?
Yeah, I would. You know, honestly, I think first and foremost I would try to move back, which I think the Texans will do. And I'll just tell you now, I know it flies in the convention of what you're hearing there in Philadelphia out of guys who I love a lot, Ron Jaworski and especially Greg Cosell. I've watched Manziel a lot. I've watched him in games. I've watched him on actual coaches' tapes as well. And I see what Greg Cosell has a problem with. But I got to tell you, I think some of it is coachable. Talking to a quarterback coach who I know, he believes that Johnny Manziel, some things can be tweaked, and that Manziel is an unusual prospect in that Manziel really has to be in, if you put him in an offense that he's comfortable in, you're going to get results in the NFL that you're maybe not used to. So I would still be considering Johnny Manziel, but from a size standpoint, it bothers me a little bit. I do understand that running the football is going to put him in a little bit more danger. And if you put the gun to my head, I'm taking Jadeveon Clowney simply because he's got game-changing traits, and I think there's a higher floor on Clowney than there is going to be on Manziel.
You've heard the comparisons to Fran Tarkenton and Russell Wilson. I think you were the first one to make the comparison to Liam Neeson in your piece that's up on the sidelineview.com right now. What are the particular set of skills that you think will make him most attractive to NFL teams?
You know, his particular set of skills is that his ability to operate left and right and to make plays, in a way, he's a tiny version of Ben Roethlisberger, and he's got a turbocharged button pushed at all times. You know, in reality is Ben Roethlisberger's got the skill set that we know about where he's willing to take 45 sacks in a year just so he can throw 11 touchdowns when you don't expect him to because he wards off the pass rush and shakes him off and throws a pass down the field that no one expects. Johnny Manziel can do the exact same thing, and in a lot of ways I think he's a lot like a Ben Roethlisberger as a competitive person, as a guy who may have, you know, have some difficulties in being coached at times, the guy who may have some issues off the field in terms of loving a party, things like that. I think there's a lot of similarities to Ben, except for the fact that he plays the game like Ben, but he's probably a good 50 pounds lighter. That's the big concern right there. His particular set of skills is that he can make NFL caliber throws. He can make them on the move, and I think he has an elite level of confidence slash poise against, you know, in the face of adversity. And some of it we've seen and some of it we haven't seen. But I'm going to tell you something. I'm bothered by Chavis and that LSU defense putting Johnny in a bad spot in two games in a row. That concerns me because that's an NFL caliber defense, and that's an NFL coordinated defense. That's what it looks like with NFL type of athletes. However, you can't just say that in one sentence and then ignore what he did against Nick Saban, one of the absolute masterminds defensively in any football level. You can't just say, well, look at the LSU game without mentioning what happened in the Alabama game. You have to. And I think what Manziel is able to do, because he fears nothing at any time, I think it allows him to make certain throws that other guys are going to be worried about. There are going to be more interceptions with him. That's a given. But with those interceptions, there's going to be touchdowns and some game-winning plays that other guys will simply be afraid to make. And I think Teddy Bridgewater is one of those guys that I think he's going to be afraid to make certain throws in the NFL level the more I study him. I really do. I think he's going to turn out into a check-down Charlie, where Johnny Manziel is going to keep on firing. And there's negatives that go with that, but that set of skills that he has where he's fearless, it will hurt you, but at times it will win games for you. I've seen it with Ben Roethlisberger with my own eyes. My dad had to, you know, try to coach a line to block up in front of him for what seemed like an eternity. And, you know, those kind of guys who make those plays and who never lack confidence, that's hard to find on any level.
One thing I want to get into here is this study that you're doing on the quarterback position, and you've broken down Manziel. You've also have worked on a piece regarding Teddy Bridgewater. Can you take us into the methodology that you've used? Because you're not just using the scouting tape, you're also using some in-depth analytics in terms of making this study. Can you take us to how you've gone about evaluating and breaking down these top quarterbacks in the 2014 NFL Draft?
You know, I've been using the StatSize data for a couple of years now. I get the data from John Pollard, who's the general manager for Sports Solutions Group with Stats. And they do an amazing job with the NBA, where they are king in the NBA. And what I'm doing is I'm taking the tape and I'm looking at the tape. And certainly there's some projections you have to make. Right? Teddy Bridgewater plays against lesser competition at Louisville than Johnny Manziel does. But at the same time, how do you try to equalize that? Well, you can find similar competition on tape for Teddy Bridgewater that you have for Johnny Manziel. Florida in 2012 is a great example of that. But what I found is that using the data, certain data, figuring out which data translates to the NFL, and then understanding how you can marry that data with what you're seeing on tape, that's what I'm trying to do in this piece on the sideline view. I did it with Manziel, and the piece with Teddy Bridgewater that should be out this afternoon. You know, Teddy Bridgewater across the board is a high completion percentage guy with intermediate routes from 6 to 15 yards. Really 0 to 15, it's hard to find anybody in college football that did a better job of consistently completing those passes. So that tells me he's got that accuracy on the short to intermediate stuff, which is critical. And so now I go back and watch the tape and I see, okay, what was the level of competition and what kind of defenses, was he facing? And everything checked out. There was no problems. Then I saw that Teddy Bridgewater has amazing numbers against the blitz. And so I had to go back and watch him versus the blitz. He had 16 touchdowns and one interception against the blitz. And he actually was very slightly better from a completion percentage standpoint against the blitz than Manziel was. Than he was in all other passes. Johnny Manziel's completion percentage fell off by 12%. When he was blitzed, he fell off by 12% from 73% when he was non-blitzed and 61% when he was blitzed. That was a big deal. I look at Teddy Bridgewater, and Bridgewater got slightly better from his non-blitz to blitz numbers. So that shows me poise. That shows me the ability to remain calm in the face of adversity, which is what you're going to face in the NFL. That matters to me. However, now I take a look at the type of throws he made when he was throwing his deep balls, because he was very inaccurate with some of his deep stuff down the sideline. And so I've got to go take a look at those throws on tape when I saw the data. I saw the data, and it alerted me, go look at him on tape for these deep ball throws and why he's inconsistent. And I found some issues. What I found was a lack of touch on certain throws that he's going to have to make when teams blitz him in the NFL. When he starts thinking, you know, they're going to force him to throw deep. They're going to force him to throw and beat man-to-man coverage down the sideline. If he doesn't have better touch, he's in trouble. Here's something else the data told me. Teddy Bridgewater is incredibly accurate. I just told you guys that. What I didn't tell you is that his numbers go down when he throws and looks left, and then when he rolls out left, which he only did two times all year long, or when he scrambles out of the pocket and tries to throw after scrambling left, his completion percentage was under 50% when he scrambled left, and he was 0 for 2 when he rolled left. Teddy Bridgewater is a substantially right-handed quarterback, and I need to know that from a data standpoint, and I need to go look at that on a film standpoint so I can see why did he struggle when he threw left? Why did he struggle when he was rolling left or scrambling left and tried to throw? Is it correctable, or are there issues there that are going to continue to be problems in the NFL? Because I can promise you this. Teams like the Philadelphia Eagles, who get these data points for college players and NFL players, who get these tendency reports on a weekly basis, they're going to game plan based on tendencies, just like NFL defense coordinators have always done. Only this data program, like from StatSize, they allow you to get there faster and know what you're looking for on tape. In the past, you have to watch tape to figure out tendencies. Now, these programs are saying, here's your tendencies, now go look at it on tape. And defenses will now gear up to stop Bridgewater throwing right. They'll get in his face to the right and force him to the left. And if he can't figure out a way to correct that, then he's going to struggle on the next level. And that's how I'm marrying what I'm watching on tape with the data that I see as much as I can.
So Lance, push come to shove, would you rather have Johnny Football or Teddy Bridgewater?
I'd rather have Bridgewater I'd rather have Manziel and Bortles over Bridgewater right now. Wow. And I'll tell you why, for the Houston Texans, and this is why. If I'm a team that needs a guy who's steady, I'm going Bridgewater. If I'm a team that's starting from the bottom and I need to try to build, I'm going to try to hit a home run before I'm going to try to hit a double. Teddy Bridgewater's a double. He's safe. He's a high-character guy. And I think he'll be accurate with the short stuff. But I think he's a guy that once he figures out that he's going to have a hard time making some of those cover two throws between the corner and safety, and he kind of fails it a little bit on the dig routes, I think you're going to see Teddy start to default to check down routes and the short stuff, which is what he did at Louisville. You know, he was so accurate, so consistent with that. And I think it goes from being an advantage where I say, boy, he's really accurate to short stuff, to a disadvantage where I start saying on the next level, man, he's just willing to take the short, safe stuff, and he's having a hard time hitting plays down the field because you got to hit home runs every once in a while in the NFL to have a chance. And so I'd rather take a shot with Johnny Manziel or Blake Bortles based on a combination of tape and some of the data. Although I will tell you, when the Bortles piece comes out in a few days, this guy's way behind Manziel and way behind Teddy Bridgewater most of the analytics that you take a look at.
Lance, we want to transition a little bit to the linemen now, but first you touched on it a little bit with your dad. I want you to tell us what it was like growing up with an offensive line coach for a dad.
You know, it was, he's not just an offensive line coach, he's also a Marine. So
really?
Double whammy. And he served in Vietnam. So I had that going on at Little League baseball games. but it was actually, he wasn't that bad at Little League games, to be honest with you. He was out recruiting quite a bit. He was at University of Houston. He was a high school coach from the time I was a year old. And then when I was, I guess, 8 years old, he got a shot with Bill Yeoman at University of Houston. And, you know, it was fun. It was fun. We didn't really get into any kind of X's and O's when I was young, but he would invite me in to go watch tape on the little reel-to-reel he had, and I'd watch the old Houston Oilers take on the Killer Bees from the Miami Dolphins. I'd watch Miami Dolphins line play. I'd watch the Oakland Raiders, and he'd tell me some things about what Raider defense was, which is, you know, I think at the time where there was 9 men on the defensive line, and he showed me old footage of Kirk Gibson at Michigan State as a wide receiver back then before he went into baseball. So I remember some very specific things about it. But we really didn't get into the specifics of line play until much later on. I was really into, I loved all the sports, but I really got into basketball by the time I got into junior high. And that was, you know, that was my first love and passion. And then as I got a little bit older, I started gravitating more towards football. And then as I got into, you know, my 20s, I started to dig in a little bit more on offensive line. And once he recognized that, you know, I had a desire to learn more about line play. My brother's an offensive lineman in college. He played at Nicholls State. I was a quarterback, and then I just went to basketball and baseball after I was behind a quarterback who I was not going to beat out. So I was like, goodbye. I'm going to basketball full time. And once I really got into line play and he started teaching me more and more about it, over the years, I've done a lot of my own work and my own studying. And it's to the point now where, you know, I know exactly what he looks for. He'll call me on some of these prospects and get my thoughts on some of the offensive line prospects because he knows that I've been schooled on, you know, in terms of what he looks for. And he also knows that I look at all these offensive line prospects on a regular basis. And so learning, I think it's, to be honest with you guys, I think it's the position that is most screwed up in the NFL. Quarterbacks are just hard to figure out because they're hard to project. I find that a lot of NFL scouts really don't have a good feel for what they're looking for. And I'll include the NFL draft media. You know, I think Mike Mayock is the best in the business in terms of the guys who are out there, you know, in the front and center. And I think Greg Cosell is right there with him. I think Mike Mayock is way off on David Yankee. I'm not sure what he's looking at on David Yankee, if you really want to know, if you really want me to be honest. I'm not sure David Yankee is even in my top 5 guards. And I think that goes for some of the offensive line coaches I've spoken with about Yankee when I've got grades on him. So I think there are some guys out there who do a great job, even with offensive line play, but there are just subtle nuances and subtleties that maybe they don't understand because they haven't spent as much time grinding with offensive line coaches as you need to. And, to be fair, some offensive lines like the Philadelphia Eagles are going to look for something completely different than an offensive line like the Arizona Cardinals will look for. Two completely different styles.
Lance, speaking of the Eagles, can you give us your analysis of Lane Johnson going into the draft last year and how you think he developed in Jeff Stoutland and Chip Kelly's offense throughout his rookie season?
You know, I thought he had elite feet, and I watched him every single week. I had a blast watching Chip Kelly's team, and I really felt vindicated and validated with my comments about that offense and what was going to take place before the season. And Lane Johnson, obviously, is the guy who follows offensive line play. I watched him closely, and I watched Derek Johnson closely. And before Luke Joeckel got hurt, you know, those are going to be the three guys that I watched on a weekly basis. And I can tell you, Lane Johnson's way ahead of where Eric Fisher is, let me put it that way. I thought Lane had some issues with hand placement early on. I don't think he trusted his technique. And I think he really didn't have a great understanding of the ability for so many defensive ends to give him two-way moves. You know, you really can't overset or overcommit one direction or the next. But as the season moved on, obviously Lane is a really good run blocker because of his physical skill set. But the other thing that was really impressive to me was I saw him improve as a pass blocker, and I saw him gain confidence. And I think it's obvious what we're looking at is Jason Peters is going to be gone sooner rather than later based on the fact of, you know, his age versus his money. And when Lane Johnson slides over there, I don't think he'll miss a beat. I think Lane Johnson, for all the talk about the tackle prospects, right now, by the set odds, I think Lane Johnson's probably the 2-1 favorite over the other two guys to be the best tackle coming out of this draft, last year's draft. I really like what I saw from him in terms of the way he improved.
Lance, you talked about how the consensus in the national draft or in the NFL draft media may be a little bit off in terms of evaluating offensive line prospects. Is there one trait that you think may be a bit overvalued when guys are putting together the reports on players?
Yes, because I used to make this mistake, and it's feet. I think feet gets overvalued. Not that it's not important. You've got to have feet. But one thing that I learned, and this is directly from my dad directly, and then studying differently once he told me this, is NFL power is first and foremost the trait you have to look for. Do you have functional strength? You don't have to be a powerful guy, but you have to have functional NFL strength. And if you don't have functional NFL strength, it's hard to even play in the league. And there are some guys in this year's drafting that I see that being an issue with. Now, of course, functional power is different for a power scheme team versus a zone scheme team, but there's a certain level of strength that you must have to play in the league as a starter. And I think a lot of people in the draft media get so overwhelmed by feet and feet quickness that they fail to pay attention to whether or not a guy's strong enough to make it in the NFL. I think the other thing that people really don't focus on enough, because sometimes they get overwhelmed by how powerful a guy is once he latches onto a guy. Well, there are plenty of guys like Antonio Richardson from Tennessee. You run right into Tiny Richardson, yeah, you're going to get blocked. You know, you're not going to bull rush him. Tiny Richardson has power and has strength. So a lot of guys who look at power, they look at guys, you know, how they handle a guy running into him. Well, that's fine and good, but how does he handle somebody making an inside move on him? How does he change directions? How does he go from getting his weight out there towards the left as he kick slides and then have to make a quick move back inside to pick up the pass rusher who's now made an inside move? Well, he stinks at that. Tiny Richardson's not good at it. And if you can't do that, then teams are going to beat you inside. And once you start looking for the inside move, they're going to beat you around the corner. So I think power and change of direction are the absolute two most key elements for offensive linemen that sometimes gets overlooked in place of foot quickness one and then power two. I think it should be power one, change of direction two, and then we'll worry about foot quickness depending on what scheme we run and, you know, what position we're looking at.
So, Lance, you've talked about, you know, the Eagles are looking for different things from their offensive linemen than other teams, power teams. Who are some of the guys maybe in the mid-rounds of this draft who sort of fit that Eagles mold?
Well, I think, you know, I don't know if it will be mid-rounds. This guy's shooting up, and I've been looking at Phil Bitonio for a long time, and the more and more people study him, the more and more they like him at guard, and he is just an absolute perfect fit for what the Eagles would want to do from a mindset standpoint. And from just a physical standpoint, but I got two names for you, and you guys saw both of these guys at the Senior Bowl. Neither one was overly impressive, but both of them are good fits. One is Wesley Johnson from Vanderbilt. He'll be an undersized guard, but you know, so is Evan Mathis. Who cares? He's smart. He can slide inside the center. He can play guard. He'll be a little undersized, but he moves well. He's very technically sound, and I think because of his size, and some people being a little, you know, some people pegging him as a center only, I think he could slide to the middle round, and I think he's a guy you look at. I also think that another guy that you really have to take a close look at, and a guy who I thought wasn't very good, honestly, at the Senior Bowl was Billy Turner, North Dakota State. Billy Turner really struggled in one-on-one pass protection drills, but what I saw from Billy Turner that I liked on tape and at the Senior Bowl was an ability to move well in space and anchor and drop, you know, and show some sand in his pants when guys tried to bull rush him. He was very technically unsound at tackle, and he needed on-the-spot coaching right away to really help him, and he wasn't going to be able to fix all that in, you know, one Senior Bowl session or two Senior Bowl days. But when I watched him bump inside the guard, I kind of liked him a little bit, and on top of that, what I saw was a guy who moves well, would fit Philadelphia, had enough strength inside, has the length you look for, and has a little bit of a nasty streak. And I think that Senior Bowl really hurt his draft prospects. But what I saw, what came from that is, hey, wait a minute, this guy might be a guard, and he might be a guard for a team who really wants to, you know, run some zone scheme but wants to get a little bit more powerful. And I think he'd be a good fit for the Eagles, and I think he'll be there in the fourth.
Bo, you
got one more for you, Lance. Since we've been talking, you mentioned the Texans who have all come over to the Eagles. Can you give us a quick scouting report on the crazy man, Brian Braman?
Brian Braman, number one, is one of the most popular players in the city of Houston, period. Number two, if you get a chance, ask him about who his favorite superheroes are, because he doesn't really care about talking about football, but he will tell you all about the Spider-Man movies and things like that. And he means it. Like, when you talk to him, you realize this guy really means it, what he's talking about with these superheroes. So go ahead and do that. He is a maniac running down the field. I mean, an absolute maniac on special teams. Teams really game plan to try to take him out special teams-wise. He's got really good speed off the edge as a pass rusher. He had really solid preseason games, and for whatever reason, the Texans just had no interest in playing him as a pass rusher. Now, maybe he didn't show the football intelligence to handle the position. I don't know. But he's an incredible athlete. He's a wild man on special teams. And he's a guy that the fans are really, really going to like because he leaves it all out there on the field. I was a little surprised the Texans let him walk. But when you see him, you're going to like him a lot. Special teams demon. And I'd be very interested to see if the Eagles maybe get him on the field and try to turn that natural athletic ability loose, because this guy's a freak daddy athlete. He really is. And I'm interested to see if the Eagles try to turn him into a situational pass rusher where Wade Phillips wouldn't take that chance.
I smell a Wolsten column coming down the line here some point next season. Lance Ehrlein from thesidelineview.com. Make sure to check out the website for the latest on the NFL draft, great scouting reports, and, of course, the in-depth analysis on all of the quarterbacks in this year's draft class. Lance, thank you very much for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.
And I got to say, guys, PhiladelphiaEagles.com, you guys do a fantastic overall job of draft information, and I'm probably visiting your information as much as you're going to my site, because you guys are cranking out the best, the best draft stuff I'm finding from any NFL team. There's no question about that. So congrats on the work you guys are doing.
Appreciate it, Lance. Thanks.
That was Lance Ehrlein from thesidelineview.com. Again, tremendous insight about the draft and everything really about the NFL, especially from a scouting standpoint. It's time for our final segment, The Pick is In. And we went on Twitter to ask you your take on who would you want to see in Midnight Green out of any of the offensive players in this year's draft. So not just what the Eagles could do at number 22. If the Eagles, say, had the number one pick, would you want to see them take a quarterback, receiver, running back, whatever? And the first one, we've delved into this guy a little bit here on the show already. At Eagles Coverage wants Sammy Watkins out of Clemson.
Slammy Watkins. I'm in.
At Be More Robbie goes a guy who could be there at number 22, is actually expected to be there at 22, depending on which mock drafts you look at. Odell Beckham from LSU. How would
ODB.
ODBJ.
Yeah, but I just want
you gotta go ODB. even in Be More Robbie's tweet, other people said Odell Beckham. I went with Be More Robbie because you refer to him as ODB.
And that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, so.
Shimmy, shimmy, yeah.
What are your thoughts on Beckham?
What are your thoughts on Beckham?
I mean, I think he'd be a great fit. I think he's a much more polished receiver. Him and Landry both are very polished receivers. Both are very good at selling double moves and able to gain separation at the top of their stem. Are very good at stacking receivers once they get off the line of scrimmage. Both are good blockers. Both attack the ball in the air. Both have good hands. Odell Beckham, one of the most amazing plays I've seen in the last few years is against UAB, and I think he did it against Georgia as well. He lined up, and he's a kick returner as well, I should say, so obviously there's that value as well. But lined up to take a kick return, and it was back of the end zone. He reaches up. He's gonna fair catch this. It's going to be a touchback. But he reaches up with one hand and grabs the ball like it's a tennis ball and then just kneels on it. So just to show off, completely just grabbed the ball like it was a tennis ball, snatched it out of the air with one hand on a kickoff and kneeled on it. Just flat out amazing on, you know, God-given ability.
And I remember from the stats breakdown of those top receivers that was on Roto-World about a month ago, he was the best at or I guess the highest percentage of catches beyond 15 yards. So he's a guy who does create that downfield separation.
Yeah, obviously you had Zach Mettenberger throwing him the football. So you had a guy who had a great arm. You had a possession receiver underneath in Landry because, you know, Beckham is definitely the more athletic of the two. And so you had those opportunities to hit on those deep balls, and, you know, Beckham hit on them more often than not.
Couple other guys mentioned here on Twitter. At GJC004, this guy is my early prediction for the Merrill Reese draft weekend pick.
Allen Robinson.
Of course, yes.
That was easy. I could just hear him
that's where I would have gone for Merrill, but that's
really?
Great.
Really?
That's a great pick.
Oh,
well,
that was
who
would you?
Well, let's talk about some of the guys who it's been in the past. We've had Mark Herzlick, obviously, yes. Myron Roll.
Yep.
And then who was it last year?
Jordan Poyer. And Chris Polk the year before.
That's funny.
Really?
So it was.
Yeah, so he's hit on a couple.
I could see the Allen Robinson one for sure. That's
also Ryan connection. Mallett was a big Merrill guy a couple years ago.
Very yes, interesting. Especially with the rumors earlier this spring that he was going to get dealt and get a chance at a starting gig.
If Merrill was a GM, he would have been on the phone for sure.
No question about it.
This is Merrill Reese. who would you put in the Merrill Reese category?
I hadn't thought about
it's
it.
A tough
but
one.
I'm impressed
I know
at you.
On the spot.
Penn State's always on the top of his mind, so that's pretty good for Allen Robinson. I don't know who I would have thought of.
The Poyer one to me was the one that came out of left field. Yeah. That was one where, you know, it's not like he was, you know, a big name player and from a complete opposite end of the country.
Right.
So last year he talked about Jordan Poyer probably from round three on, and when they called his name at the end of round seven, the pure elation. It was like Christmas morning for Merrill, which was great.
Your take on Allen Robinson though, as a player?
I mean, just he's probably, in terms of a physical skill set, is probably just a step below what you would want in terms of an elite category. But he's very good at a number of different things. He's got, you know, very good hands. He's one thing where I would say he is great is yard after catch. He's got great vision with the ball in his hands. There were a number of touchdowns that he had where he would catch a short screen and cut back across the field multiple times against not just, you know, it wasn't against Central Florida or Nicholls State or Little Sisters of the Poor. It's against Ohio State and Wisconsin, you know, where he's making these moves in the open field and, you know, cutting back across the grain and taking it to the house. Very, very impressive. But, again, a very good route runner, good hands, good size kid. I think he came in around 6'1". Very, just an impressive guy. Didn't run particularly well at the combine. I'm not sure exactly what he ran. But, again, like I said, I think he's probably a step below what you would want from a physical standpoint for one of those elite first-round receivers, especially in a class like this. that'll kind of set him apart.
Compare and contrast another selection from at Shaq Mitchell, Jordan Matthews of Vandy.
I'll let you. This is a guy that we saw.
We watched tape on Jordan Matthews a lot leading up to the Senior Bowl. Then we watched him in person at the Senior Bowl. On tape, he dropped a lot of balls, and a lot of his catches are. I mean, they really fed him the ball. He was the offense, and
no
so
question.
So they would throw screens to him all the time. So,
screen heavy was the James Franklin's offense at Vanderbilt. And we were just talking about Penn State. They're going to, you know, the PSU faithful can. Anticipate a lot of screens because they fed him the ball.
And so he had a lot of yards after the catch, if you look at the numbers, and he had a ton of catches. But it was disappointing. He had a lot of drops, and there were times when he was a bit of a body catcher. He wasn't grasping the ball. He's an impressive athlete. He's got good size. And he was probably the best or second-best receiver at the Senior Bowl.
For sure.
He's a good prospect. But I think he is sub that elite level of receivers in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, there will be plays, and he showed it at the Senior Bowl. I remember the first day we were standing, it was at the second field.
Right.
Where he'll go up and he'll attack the ball in the air, and he's 6 foot 2.5, 220 pounds, whatever he is, and he'll go up and get the ball, and you say, wow, like this kid is legit. Just the way that he attacks the ball in the air, obviously a kid his size, and he's able to run a little bit. And he, like Bo said, he's, you know, a lot of plays where he's getting quality yards after catch. It's really just a consistency thing. If you took his top 30 plays and put him against the other top 30 of all these other guys, you would put him at that level. But it's just a question of doing it down after down.
Shout out to Fairhope Stadium.
Absolutely.
Two more guys.
And the Chick-fil-A on the way, by the way.
That's right. Ooh. And what was the shrimp place?
We'd have to ask our producer, Brian Thomas, about that one.
They'll give you what you want.
Last two guys, both Oregon connections. One real quick here. Jay Chapman, 65. Has DeAnthony Thomas, obviously the explosive all-purpose weapon. Is there a need for him? And obviously you want to draft the best player, but is there really a role for him, I should say, with Darren Sproles in the fray?
There's always a role. I think every team has a fit for a guy like that, as long as you have the mind to be able to do that, which obviously Chip Kelly does. I mean, just a guy who can play a number of different roles, a number of different positions. A lot of teams see him as a running back. I personally think his best fit as a receiver. But no, I think there's absolutely a role. There's always going to be a role for a guy like DeAnthony Thomas. Black Mamba, I'll take him any day.
I will go full fanboy here and say that I would absolutely love DeAnthony Thomas to get in this Eagles offense. No question about it.
And you know, he ran the official, the laser time was 4.5 flat. So I think people were disappointed in that. So, you know, obviously with that and his size, I think he could fall possibly to the third day. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see a team take him much earlier. Bo and I obviously would be in favor of that, but I could see how teams could say, maybe not him, maybe we'll wait. Because if you're going to see him as a running back, you don't know if he's never going to be a feature back. He's never going to be a guy who's going to be the bell cow of your offense. But as a movable chess piece to move around the formation, he's as good as you can ask for.
I've decided that for Merrill, I'm going to go with A.J. McCarron.
Oh, that's a great one. Yes. A little bit of an underdog. A winner.
He's a winner.
He's a winner.
He's a winner.
He has it.
Oh, that's good.
That's a good one.
That's going to be it.
Well, and that's one of my favorite Brent Musburger names. Like, there are some names that Brent Musburger is just great. Like, you're watching Saturday Night Football and
Brent Musburger.
Yeah. You know, like McElroy, who just retired and is now going to join ESPN.
Greg McElroy.
That was by far the best Musburger name. McCarron had a good one, too. So that's I could definitely good. See Merrill making that transition and taking over. You know, that he wants A.J. McCarron.
That thing from Twitter goes with a player that I'm fascinated by, Colt Lierla, another Oregon kid, didn't play last year, has the off-the-field issues, but talent-wise would certainly stack up among the top tight ends in this draft class. What do you think about Chip Kelly saying that if he obviously fits what the Eagles are looking for, not just from the playing standpoint, but in the locker room standpoint, is this a guy who maybe we could see the Eagles adding?
Well, I'll tell you what. I would be very excited if the Eagles drafted Colt Lierla because I think Chip knows him better than anybody. And if he feels comfortable taking Colt Lierla and if he is ready to make that jump, then I'm all in because Chip knows him better than anybody.
Certainly.
But from a talent standpoint, Fran, how does he
I mean,
stack
the famous the hashtag right now that's going around on Twitter is, you know, In Chip We Trust, and that just kind of piggybacks off your point. I mean, if he makes that move, then everybody should be all in because he knows him better than anybody. From a talent standpoint, I mean, you're talking about, again, one of the most talented guys at the position. You know, it's rare that you'll see some of these tight ends come out that are as far along as a blocker, not just as a receiver, but as a blocker, as Laiola was, not just last year as a junior, he only played, you know, two games and change, but as a sophomore, the hand placement, the pad level, the feet as a blocker was really next level stuff. So obviously, you know, he had some inconsistencies with his hands. And we spoke on the off field stuff. I mean, you know, there are some questions, but if he were to end up here, I mean, you have to have the utmost faith that it's going to work out.
So much fun. And we still have a few more weeks to go to break it all down here on our Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson. Thank you very much for joining us, for Fran Duffy and Bo Wolf as well. We'll be back again next week. Do we have our guests lined up for next week?
I'm thinking it'll be Charles Davis, but I'm not 100% sure. I'll go back with Charles and see if we can get him on the show.
Great to have him on. We had the great Lance Zierlein from the Sideline View. Tremendous insight once again. So thank you for joining us here, and we'll be back soon enough.